passion and pageantry of college football lives here. This is the Paul Feinbaum Show, our one podcast.
This might be college football heaven.
We're in the middle of the week, and thanks so much for joining us today. We have a fantastic show, and we start with the new head coach at Texas A&M. Thanks for being here. Before we get out to College Station, one more ranking, and that's the one that matters most. A lot of teeth gnashing over what happened last night. You see FSU at 4, Oregon, Ohio State, 7 and 8 simply will not move. That could change with both playing for conference championships this week. And speaking about a man who wants to be playing for championships soon, that is Mike Elko, named this week to take over at Texas A&M. He knows the territory. He was the defensive coordinator out there before heading to Duke to become the head coach. And we begin by saying hello to Mike Elko right now. Coach, first of all, congratulations. I have no earthly idea what the last couple of days has been like. Tell us about it. Good afternoon.
Yeah, thanks. Thanks for having me on, Paul. Appreciate it. You know you've arrived in the SEC when you get on the Feinbaum Show. And so the last couple of days, it's been a whirlwind. You know, there's obviously so much to do and not nearly enough time to get it done. And so I've been trying to get these days to last 48 hours, but I haven't had much luck with that yet.
And there's so many things happening, and you've made one transition as a head coach already at Duke. This is a little bit different, but how do you prioritize? Because you have to do some media availability, but you have also have to put a staff together, make sure your team is intact, be ready for the portal and recruiting.
Yeah, I think obviously going through it once certainly gets you ready for it. This obviously feels like it's happening at warp speed. But I think the biggest thing you got to do is you got to prioritize what's important right now. And obviously, you got to put yourself in position to get around different people here at Texas A&M, different media requests. But you can't lose sight of signing day's coming. We got a class of commits that we got to get locked in and signed with us. We got a portal opening, and so we got to get a lot of one-on-one meetings with our own roster and make sure that we're locking our guys in. And then, you know, while you're doing all that, you're trying to put a staff together. And, you know, we haven't touched on the family that you have to kind of handle and worry about too. So your plate's full every day, but I think you just prioritize what matters the most and you go after it.
Well, it's good. It's good news that your family knows the territory, but I'm sure it's never easy leaving a place like Durham, North Carolina, either.
No, but it's a unique situation. I told somebody this last night. You know, it's not often you walk into the first team meeting and 50 guys come up to you and give you a big hug because you were here with them and you knew them. And my daughter went to dinner the other night and she had 5 of her girlfriends come and meet her that she had gone to school with. And so it's a little bit of a unique transition. We've never really been through one like this before where it is new and it is fresh, but there's also so much familiarity with everything around here.
Which brings me to this question, because you were such a part of that as the defensive coordinator. It's one thing to walk into a place you've never been and say, we're going to change the culture, we're going to change this. But how do you walk around that fine line and nuance it? Because you were part of, not the last couple of years, I might add, but you were part of at least some of the foundation of this program that you're now moving into.
Yeah, I think I had a unique perspective on it all. And, you know, I think I was here for 4 years and I know all of the reasons why this place should win a national championship. And, you know, maybe you learn some of the reasons why we haven't. And, you know, you just come in here with a fresh start, with a fresh vision, and you try to do some of the things that you think need to happen to take all of the talent we have and to maximize it and to get it out on the field playing the way all Texas A&M fans want to see it play.
So having been a part of what Coach Fisher brought there, leaving it, and the last 2 years have been a little bit spotty, to say the least, what do you think it is to take it from this point? This is still a good program. It's not elite, but it's good. How do you make it elite? How do you compete for championships?
Yeah, I mean, first of all, like, so thankful to Coach Fisher for even bringing me here and giving me this opportunity. And, you know, never want to lose sight of that. But I think what we have to do is we got to roll up our sleeves and go to work. I said this to the team in my first meeting. You know, we've got to stop talking about what Texas A&M is capable of becoming, and we got to start being about it. And what that takes is it takes us rolling up our sleeves and really going to work. You know, we got to identify who we are, which is a team that is capable of winning a national championship, but really is coming off of a year where we didn't get close to doing that. And if we want to bridge that gap, you know, it's going to start with securing the roster, making sure we get the guys that need to be here and staying part of this thing. But it's going to go into the offseason, and it's going to lay in a blueprint for success into how we want to get where we want to go. And I think that's the biggest thing that we got to build into this program.
Coach, it begins with a lot of things, but you have to have a staff together. How much of what you had with you in Durham are you going to bring with you here?
Yeah, I think every time you come and you put a staff together, it's a huge puzzle. And there's a lot of guys in Durham that I think fit and I think are going to make a lot of sense here. And, you know, we obviously had a ton of success at that program and took it to really big heights really quick and did things that really hadn't happened at Duke. And so I think there are quite a few of those guys that are going to make a sense, that are elite coaches, elite men, elite relationship builders and elite recruiters. And so those guys we're going to try to get here. And then, you know, there's also 24 years in the coaching industry of relationships that you build. And you got to make sure, obviously, you're taking care of the state of Texas and some of those other things that matter. And so we'll go through a process and we'll get all of the right pieces together and, you know, ultimately build the absolute best staff we can for Texas A&M.
I mean, since it is now your job to turn this into a championship program, why do you think, if you have an opinion on what has happened, not so much even the immediate past, but over a long course of history, why has A&M never been able to break through? Because they have everything that you seemingly need.
Yeah, I just think it comes down to we've got to put it all together. I think for whatever reason, the pieces have been in place, but the puzzle's never been assembled. And I think leadership can help that. I think we've got to do a really good job of laying a clear-cut path to where we want to go. And then we've got to develop a culture in this locker room that wants to work together to get there. And, you know, sometimes people want these big, elaborate, long answers, but it really doesn't come down to much. Culture wins, and talented culture wins championships. And that's been tried and true over the course of college football. And that's what we've got to get done here. And we've got to find a way to get that done as fast as possible, because the 12th man is starving for that SEC championship and that national championship.
Coach Elko, in terms of from a recruiting standpoint, you've recruited this school, so you know what it's all about. How do you continue what has already been put in place but maybe not been able to be sustained?
Yeah, I mean, this is an extremely special place. When you look at the Aggie network and how Aggies take care of Aggies, you're getting an education that will last you and set you up for success the rest of your life. That makes it unique. When you come to Kyle Field, pick a Saturday, any Saturday, there's going to be 100,000 people strong in there, if not more, standing, screaming, creating the best atmosphere in college football. You know, that certainly helps. We play in a talent-rich state. There's a ton of players in the state of Texas that can come together and help us win a national championship, and that helps. And so we've got a lot of advantages to sell down here at Texas A&M, and we've got to just make sure kids are understanding that we're going to put together a program that's going to develop them into becoming everything they're capable of becoming, both on and off the field.
2 weeks ago, when the change was made, Ross Bjork, your now boss, said at his press conference about the program being stuck in neutral. You can quantify that in many different ways, but you alluded to it a second ago, but how do you get this thing going to keep up with what you know is the elite of the Southeastern Conference, and that's Georgia and Alabama?
Yeah, I mean, listen, college football is constantly changing, and it's constantly evolving, and it's hard to sustain success for long periods of time, and sometimes all it takes is just a fresh vision, a fresh energy, and a fresh excitement, right? And better, worse, sometimes doesn't even matter, just coming in and putting a new spin on things. And you know, we just got to reignite this program. You know, it's not that long ago that we were 9-1 and should have been in the college playoff, and I was here for that season, and I was part of that season. And you know, it doesn't really much matter what's happened since then. What we've got to do is we got to get it back to that level, especially with the expanded playoffs, right? Because if we kind of have that success the way we were able to have it during those couple years when we got this thing going, we're in the playoffs and we're as good as anybody.
I don't know if you've had time. It seems like you probably haven't had time to do anything, but do you plan or are you thinking about conversing with Jimbo Fisher just about some things, personnel decisions, about philosophy, things that maybe went right, things that didn't go right?
Yeah, I think when the time's appropriate, you know, obviously, listen, it's a challenging situation, and nobody likes change, and nobody likes this to happen. And so I'm going to certainly give him his respect and his space. But when the time is right and the time is appropriate, certainly got a tremendous amount of respect for who he is and everything he's done in college football. And so I will reach out and just kind of take him through some of the things that he feels like I need to know.
And finally, all coaching searches are difficult to watch sometimes. As this thing started to unfold, you literally were the first name many people linked to this job because of your past. And I think one reason why the reaction from the Aggies have been so positive, but did you pay much attention to it? I mean, clearly you were coaching and had other things going on, but I would think you had interest from the moment you heard about it. Did you not?
Yeah, you know, for sure interest and for sure something that you want to think about and pay attention to and kind of examine. But you know, the challenging part of this, and this is honestly something that we need to look at, is, you know, you're going through a season with your guys that have put so much into playing for you. You know, we're competing for better bowl opportunities, and there's a lot of things going on with Duke football, and that mattered to me a whole lot more than anything that was going on in the job world. But the way these cycles are going, the way these hiring cycles are moving, you know, you can't stop the buzz, you can't stop the spin, and you know, it really creates an uncomfortable situation for the guys in that locker room. And you know, it is what it is. Nobody can complain about it, but you know, certainly my focus was on giving those kids everything I had to create the best season I could for Duke.
Coach Elko, thank you very much. It's a pleasure to say hello to you, and we look forward to seeing you soon.
Yeah, for sure, Paul. I appreciate you guys having me on, and you know, thanks for everything you do for the league.
Thank you very much. Mike Elko, fantastic. Wow, I have to say I'm just blown away by conversing with him, knowing a little bit about him in the past and intersecting with him, but he's exactly what people have said in terms of his personality and his vision for Texas A&M. We'll take a short break. We're back after this.
You're listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast.
Headlines, this one from SDS. CFP history suggests Alabama, Texas are long shots to make the Final Four. No. No team outside the top six has ever made it. I don't know why Alabama and Texas are where they are, but these geniuses on the search committee certainly know what they're doing, right? So, seeking an answer to stop Milroe, everybody had a different plan of action. Okay, we know that. Georgia had a pretty chippy practice, according to the head coach. Is that a good sign? Let's call Griff. And look who's back in town. The boys are back. Bobby Petrino back where it all began. Back in Fayetteville. Basil joins us on the return of Petrino. Sid Golden on Texas's path. Sarah Spencer on the Dogs. Your phone calls. We start with the mayor of Louisville. John is up next.
I need your vote. Vote often. Hey, Paul, I've got a quick comment on CFP and the awkward hiring down in Arkansas. But the irony hit me on Monday when a P-8 Poseidon U.S. Navy plane overshot the runway in Hawaii. And then it hit me. The flyover for the Michigan game was a P-8 Poseidon U.S. Navy plane. It's used for reconnaissance and surveillance, and is known as a spy plane. So I don't know who makes those choices, but there must have been a Michigan fan behind that somewhere.
Somewhere.
Hey, on the Arkansas hiring, I'm going to go along with Dustin from Tulsa. Not only does he lack a moral compass, but I think the hire is embarrassing. I mean, he was fired for a cause for obstruction of the police investigation, for lying, for violating hiring rules of his mistress, so on and so forth. And I just think Arkansas is a great program and could have done a lot better. It seems it comes off, Paul, as somewhat desperate by either the AD or even more desperate if Sam wanted him as the OC. What's your thought?
Well, I have been kind of immersed today in CFP happy talk. So I haven't,
and I've really, got a comment
I haven't
on
read
that.
The story. I'm curious what Sam's comments are. That's what I'm most interested in.
Yeah. On the CFP, the way it's evolved over the last couple of weeks, to me, the top eight teams are appropriate. It's been an 18 playoff. It began last week with the game, which I heard drew 19 million. So college football is doing very well. But I think, and I feel for, what's the one fan in Ohio? Elliot. OSU, and I agree with you, OSU is the top four team, but it's win or walk away, and so
yeah,
they're done.
It's not like they didn't have a chance. So when you compare Ohio State to, let's say, Alabama and Texas, that game on September 9th was not a play-in game to the playoffs. It was a great game. But Alabama is in a play-in game Saturday, and that's why I've been so outspoken about how wrong it would
FSU.
Be if they didn't advance.
Well, two thoughts. Ohio State's a great team, but, you know, they didn't beat Notre Dame. Notre Dame beat themselves.
Correct.
And I don't see Penn State as a top 10 team.
No,
who did they beat? Nobody.
I would have
moved Ohio State down to 8. But at the end of the day, Paul, if I asked you right now today, I would assume Georgia would win. Sorry, I love my Alabama fans.
Yeah, no,
but
I,
at
I
the
think
moment,
that's conventional wisdom.
Michigan, if they win, and I don't know how they – I mean, the only drama with Michigan is –
John, I think there's a bigger question, not about Michigan winning. It's whether Iowa will score.
No, the bigger one? Does Tony Petitti present the trophy to Jim Harbaugh?
I would – Tony should just toss it to him.
I know, and run. And then Oregon and Washington, whoever wins is absolutely in. So,
well,
the drama.
I think according to the cognoscenti of college football, yes.
So, I mean, we've really got the four teams right now, other than the Washington Oregon, because
there is a chance, because it always happens this way, that there. I think there will be a modicum of mystery, but there won't be. This mass chaos is not going to exist as the Stephen A. Smiths of the world, you know, try to make it out to be.
I think what changes, Paul, though, is next year. Let's use the game for an example, or let's talk about the SEC championship. Those will be more positioning games rather than
that's
into the playoffs.
John, for first round bye, first round, do you home field, just like the NFL. Thanks for the call. Will is up next. Hey, Will. Will is up next. Hello, Will. Goodbye, Will. David is up next. Good afternoon.
Hey, Paul, how you doing today, brother?
Okay, thank you.
Thank you for taking my call. I appreciate it. It's an honor to always talk to you. Hey, I wanted to give a couple of keys, I think, this week for Alabama, just to see if you agree with me, to win the game. First of all, we got to minimize our penalties. We got to do a better job of being disciplined. Secondly, we've got to stay out of third and long. And then thirdly, we've got to get Georgia off the field if we can get them to third and long.
That's a fair those are better analysis than I've heard from some of the experts. Hey, thank you very much, David. You be well. How about Ken in Alabama? Hello, Ken.
Hey, how's it going, Paul?
It's going great.
I was wondering, in your judgment, do you think that Alabama has a snowball's chance, even if they beat the stuffing out of Georgia? Do you think that would put them in the top four?
Ken, I do, because I believe in quality. And it's not about how the analytics work. I think what people don't know yet, this committee talks all this Greek about the analytics and all the things that put us to sleep. But you watch a team beat the best team in the country, and I strongly believe those committee members are going to say, man, that's something we haven't seen in a long time. How can we not put them in?
Well, I certainly hope so. And as far as Auburn being beaten by New Mexico State, when Hugh Freeze said that New Mexico State had greatly improved, I honestly believe, at first I thought he was just being nice, because no coach, New Mexico State used to be a team that you could wipe your pigskin feet off on, so to speak. You could play New Mexico State and put in your second and third string players, and even your fourth string if you had some. But they proved to be a much stronger team. In fact, they're in the championship running for their particular division. But I did not know that, and I stopped just short of promising. Well, I promised my wife, who is an Auburn fan, that Auburn would beat New Mexico State, and they would do it handily. But it didn't happen that way. But I thought Hugh Freeze was being nice, because no coach is going to say, well, this team is so bad that, we even use some of their grandmothers to play on the scout team. But, we're trying to hope our boys won't overlook New Mexico State and just be prepared to play. And I don't believe that Auburn was looking past New Mexico State and to Alabama. I think New Mexico State has just become a much stronger team. What do you think about that?
Yeah, I do, too. And I think, Ken, and some of this is what I'm about to say, came from talking to Hugh Freeze Friday. His players just didn't care. And no matter how hard you try, I'll tell you a funny old story back in my newspaper days, which you'd be one of the few people that remember. Alabama, I think it was 1981 or two, was playing Arkansas State.
Yep.
And coached by Larry Lacewell. And I went down to the press conference, and Bryant did what he said. He did this every week, and it drove me crazy as a young reporter. I said, well, Coach, what about this game Saturday? He said, Arkansas State scares me to death. He said, they're probably the best team we've played. He said, probably. He didn't say probably the best team we've – so I went back and wrote my article up. Said Bear Bryant said Tuesday that Arkansas State's the best team Alabama's played all year. I think they already played Penn State and Tennessee. And my editor screamed my name, and he called me into his office, and he threw the article at me. He said, I'm not running this trash. I said, well, that's what he said. He said, I don't care what he said. And the point being, we quit listening to coaches, Ken, because they always say the same thing. And in this time, Hugh Freeze was telling the truth.
Yeah, he sure was. I mean, I was amazed.
No, they were not only are they a good team, they're an extremely well-coached team. Hey, thank you very much for the call. We head to the break. More to come. We'll talk to Basil about the Bobby Petrino situation. Said Golden about Texas, Georgia. We're off and running here on a Wednesday afternoon.
You're listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast.
We are back, and we appreciate you checking in with us. Matt is up next.
Hey, brother. How you doing, Mr. Paul Feinbaum? I am so pumped about this hire of Mike Elko. I want your thoughts on it, and I missed by turning off his corner, but I felt like he knew that he might not stay, so he went to Arkansas. Now we got rid of the other offensive staff. And I want your thoughts and opinion on that as well, Paul.
Yeah, thanks, Matt. I like him. I think he's phenomenal reputation. And just talking to him a minute ago, I came away extraordinarily impressed. Thank you for the call. Stacy is up next.
Mr. Feinbaum, good day. I'm going to try to be real quick. First, let me apologize to you yesterday for arguing around with that fool, that boy, AJ, 4th and 31. But let me give you some facts real quick. The reason JK hate Alabama is because Alabama leads the series 15-3. He's still upset about the 93 Sugar Bowl where George Teague stripped the ball. He's mad about 21 when Tua destroyed him. Now let me go to that boy AJ. The 4th and 31 boy. He mad because the Alabama and Auburn series is 50-37-1 Alabama leaves. He's mad about the Iron Bowl, and I realized why Bunn caught the ball in the end zone, because the whole defense was wearing those dark shades that the fourth and 31 boy wears. So when it comes down to J.K., when it comes down to that boy, fourth and 31, A.J., address me as Mr. Stacy from Birmingham. And let me give you one more fact before I hang up this phone. There, if to my understanding, there is no SEC team, former or current team, that has a winning record over Alabama. And just in case for y'all that people that want Alabama to lose Saturday, guess what? Alabama owns the series against Georgia, 42-26-4. So in the words of Paul Feinbaum, it seems like Alabama is your daddy, as well as Stacy from Birmingham.
Ronald is up next in North Carolina. Ronald is up next.
Good evening, Paul.
Hey there.
My question is in reference to Alabama lost to Texas in week two. They were 3 or 4 in the country at the time. They fell all the way down to 11 or 12. There's no other team that's lost one game that was in the top 5 that has fell below 6. Why is that?
Well, I think a couple of reasons. Alabama did not play well in many games, so they didn't ever really start to impress people. They also benched the quarterback. Those things hurt. Yeah. And I think now the committee is looking at it and going, you know what? They've got one chance. And that's the one thing people haven't factored in, that one chance is against the best team in the country. And maybe I'm an optimist here, but I believe that this committee will reward Alabama, assuming they win the game.
If they don't, then I
can't think any less of the committee, so I'll just move along. Earl is up next in Maryland. Hey, Earl.
How you doing, Mr. Feinbaum? Always wonderful to talk to you on this beautiful day.
Thank you.
I'm a Maryland correspondent. Big win for my church over a weekend of beating Rutgers and whatnot. How do you see the future of my team as far as next year and beyond?
I think it's good, Earl. I'm a huge fan of Mike Loxley. I think he's been given time and support, and I think ultimately that will be rewarded. I think there's signs of progress every year, and I hope Maryland will stay with him. Thank you very much for the call. Bash is up next in Boulder.
Hey, Paul, how are you doing today?
Okay, Bash.
That is great to hear. And now I got to criticize you, Paul, about your comments you and Legend made about Coach Prime last week. Now, when you ask a Legend about what is the problem with Coach Prime, and he goes, he doesn't know how to win, I've already told you that you are the greatest sports talk show host and that you and your crew have the greatest sports talk show. And Legend, honestly, is one of your greatest, if not your greatest caller of your show.
So what is, not to rush along here from this abridged version of the Gettysburg Address, but what's your point?
At the end of the day, Paul, my point is he's just some dude that lives in Birmingham, Alabama, who has never watched
one full
game.
He may be some dude who lives in Birmingham, Alabama, but you think about this guy when you wake up in the morning and he's the last thing on your mind when you go to bed. I've always wanted to say that, Randy. Finally did. Harry is up next in New Orleans.
Hey, Paul. Thanks for taking my call.
Hey, Harry.
Paul, I couldn't help but share this with you and the callers today. The last guy to ever wear a neck brace that I could remember at a news conference was Ted Kennedy, and it cost him the presidency. So
I'm not laughing at Chappaquiddick. I just have never heard that before.
That's the truth, Paul. It's followed him all the way to the convention.
How far
this neck brace is going to follow Petrino, we'll have to see. But I'm going to enjoy that game Saturday, Paul. I finally found my 7 points. Roll Tide.
All right. Thank you very much. Thomas in West Virginia. Hey, Thomas.
Hey, Paul. How are you today, sir?
You're doing great. Thank you.
I wanted to comment on your first take this morning. You just made my day. As Howard Cosell would say, you came to tell it like it was. And also, I wanted to get your thoughts on the big game Saturday. I have an opinion. Of course, I like both teams, Georgia and Alabama. Favor the Tide. I'd like to see them get a victory and get in. And Georgia most certainly deserves to be in. And once again, Paul, for all you've done for all of us, your information, your knowledge of college football, you are the greatest that's ever been, ever will be. And I wish you and your great staff, and especially your family, Paul, a most enjoyable and blessed Thanksgiving, and may God bless.
Thomas, thank you so much. That means the world to all of us here. You be well, and God bless you. We'll take a short break. We have a lot to do. We head to Arkansas in a few minutes to get the react from Bobby Petrino. Bet it's going to be positive. Any more of your phone calls?
You're listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast.
Okay, coming up tonight. 7 p.m. Jacob is up next. Hello, Jacob.
Hey, Mr. Paul. I'm a fantastic fan of this show. And I just want to know one thing, though. You said that Florida State played a pedestrian, or they're going to play a pedestrian Louisville team this weekend. When Alabama's played 3 pedestrian teams this year, I think, personally, Florida State gets that spot, and I know they're not the SEC, they're not the best conference in the world, yes, but Florida State's best win was against LSU, and so was Alabama's, but yet
Jacob, Alabama's best win was over Ole Miss.
I don't know.
Well, I do. Look where they're ranked.
All right, you may have got me there.
And Jacob, that actually will not be their best win if we're having this conversation Sunday. You know why?
You think Alabama's going to beat Georgia this weekend?
Well, that's what this conversation is about. It's not about anything else. It's about, I mean, a lot of Florida State people are upset. I don't mean to upset anyone.
No, I'm not upset about it. I just wanted to know your point of view on it.
Florida State.
I'm not upset about it. I was just wanting to know.
Florida State is the school that seems to have a vendetta, and that's against the league they currently play in, based on that absurd Board of Trustees meeting 3 months ago. My point is this, that if Alabama beats Georgia, that is the single best win of the entire college football season, and then you're going to start comparing and contrasting, and you have to factor that in, which is impossible to do. We can't really have a legitimate substantive conversation until Saturday night, but that's what the conversation would be from my standpoint.
I get you on that. Well, I just wanted to see what you had to say about it.
I realize it probably sounds a little bit hollow coming before the game, but let's see what happens if Alabama wins this game. And if you start ranking the best wins of the college football season, that's going to be the best. The next best is pretty obvious. It's Michigan over Ohio State. And probably what the third best would be whoever wins the Washington-Oregon game. So you're then comparing these games with you, meaning Florida State, beating Louisville. I think Louisville's a good team. Louisville's about 8-4 SEC team. Would that be about right? 7-5? Yeah. I mean, where's Kentucky? Where'd Kentucky finish in the SEC? Like, where they would be in the second division, wouldn't they? Yeah, so Kentucky essentially finished 4th in the SEC East. They would be behind Alabama, LSU, Ole Miss. So what is that? I mean, they're kind of around 8th or 9th in the SEC. So your best... Yeah, an A&M. So your best team that's playing Florida State, your second best team would be about ninth in the SEC. That's really what it's all about. But thank you for your call anyway, and go Noles. Bubba is up next.
What's shaking, Paul? These people getting on your nerves today?
Not yet.
Not yet. Yeah, you don't seem to. You haven't started hanging up on them yet. That guy you hung up on yesterday that said you hung up on him before he got to ask his question, I thought I was going to lose my
that,
mind.
By the way, that is not a good preamble to a call when you say, I called you earlier, but you hung up. Well, let's do it again.
Yeah, that was it. Hey, Randy working today?
Randy, is he?
Hey, what's going on, Randy? You keep Randy busy. You need to keep him out of trouble.
Yeah, this
brother.
is like Christmas. Randy's working today.
Yeah, awesome. Listen, hey, the only thing that sucked worse than Dolly Parton's rendition of Rocky Top the other night was Tennessee's passing game all year.
Ew.
Pretty much the passing, the recipe to beating Tennessee was stop the run because Joe Milton was not going to beat you.
Is Joe Milton done at Tennessee?
Yes, thank God Joe Milton is done. I've never been so happy, other than probably Jarrett Garantano being
out. He needed to go too.
Not
I agree with you.
Anymore. But for some reason, it just seemed to me like Heupel felt like he was obligated to him this year to play him every game.
You know, Heupel kept thinking this guy has to be good. He started at Michigan.
Yeah,
and we started him here.
He saw where he peaked at, and he was looking for another level, and there just was not one there. But let me ask you something, Paul.
Okay.
This game coming up Saturday. All right, this freaking committee, we're supposed to get the four best teams in college football in the Final Four. Even if Alabama beats Georgia, you can't tell me that Georgia and Alabama both don't belong in the Final Four. I've watched everybody play. They are the two of the best teams in the country.
I agree with you 100%. And, you know, I know what the pundits out there say, oh, these guys are a bunch of SEC homers. No, we're just trying to be fair. Every time somebody accuses me of that, I did not think, and I said it publicly on ESPN and here, Alabama needed to be in the playoffs last year.
Hey, let me ask you this.
But I do think they need to be if they win this game.
What would Washington and Oregon's record be if they were in the SEC this year? Would they both be undefeated or just one loss?
I think their records would be mostly similar. I think those are top flight teams.
I think they would be 8-3 or 9-3.
I think here's my new question. It's not about Alabama and Georgia. Could Oregon win in late November in Columbia, Missouri? I'm not sure anybody could.
No.
Could they win in Knoxville? Could they win in Baton Rouge? Could they win in Auburn?
Exactly. I mean, you saw what kind of effort Alabama had to put out just to put Auburn away the other
night. Georgia had to put the same one out.
And that was an Auburn team that had got beat by New Mexico State the week before. So what does that tell you about New Mexico State? They're probably as good as Oregon.
New Mexico State needs to be in the Final Four.
You're listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast.